if we found in the middle of February we're calling you, Gary, and we're shivering in the house and we really need to add some heat strips. And this was something I remember I asked you. It was like, well, could we put them in later? And the answer was yes.
Yes. Yep.
Would it be easier to do at the time of install? Maybe, because we've got electrical runs being done. We've got all this the work being done in that area, but
at Cool Air Products, we developed AC Smart Seal Quick Shot with professionals in mind. It's the only product on the market that's 3-in-1 with sealant, lubricant, and UV dye all in a single application. It's non-toxic, non-flammable, 100% safe to the touch, eco-friendly, and compatible with all refrigerants. It's a safe solution option, backed by years of R&D, Intertech tested, and has sealed millions of leaks. AC Smart Seal, the professional's choice.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to the podcast. So for the first time ever, very first time, I have one of my customers on as a guest. He's not your average customer. I tell him this. I come clean in the beginning of the show and tell him. He's not your average customer because he's well-versed, he's educated, he makes quick decisions, and when you get into a conversation with him, he gets it, right? He gets what he's got to do to go to the next step. Now, he bought a home from 1904, I think he says. If I am mistaken, he's going to correct me when we talk. The home was built early 1900s, and there was a lot of draftiness, and he did a renovation on the home, brought it from 12 air changes per hour down to about 3 or underneath, he thinks, maybe. From some of the changes that he's done, he installed a heat pump water heater, and I installed a centralized heat pump system for him in this home as well after we did some load calculations based on what he had done to upgrade the air sealing and the insulation and stuff like that. So this is a really good conversation. If you're in residential and you're curious how you may take an older home that's having some issues and correct those issues, this conversation might be right up your alley, guys. So we got Kevin Reed Morris, one of my customers. I installed a MoveAir and I met him through Glenn Mascarene from Master. He's the one that connected us up. So this is a good one, guys. Listen up, pay attention. This is the HVAC Know-It-All Podcast. I'm your host, Gary McCready. This podcast is sponsored by Master. They have their own unique centralized and ductless heat pump. That is the MoveAir. You're going to listen to Kevin and I discuss briefly in this podcast how he decided on MoveAir and then how we got together and how I installed it after a load calculation. So if you're interested in MoveAir, guys, check it out. Check out master.ca. This podcast is sponsored by Cintas, and they have just signed on for another 6 months of podcast sponsorship. Love it. So what they do is they provide blue-collar uniforms to the blue-collar trades. They got a bunch of stuff in their lineup. If you guys are looking to outfit your team with some comfortable, nice uniforms that will last up in the weather, the sun, the rain, the snow, whatever it may be, check out cintas.com/HVAC Know-It-All.
Welcome to the HVAC Know-It-All Podcast. Recorded from a basement somewhere in Toronto, Canada. Your host and HVAC tech, Gary McCready, will take you on a deep dive into the industry, discussing all things HVAC. From storytelling to technical discussion. Enjoy the show.
All right, Kevin. So I have to tell you, this is full disclosure. You're not the average customer. You're not the average customer that an HVAC company or technician would have to deal with on the residential level. Do you agree with that? Yes or no?
I guess it depends on how you define average, Gary.
Oh, yeah, this is all positive stuff, by the way.
That's good. I mean, this is the house that Sarah and I are planning to move into is a house that we plan on being in forever. And when you take the long view on the place where you're pouring your heart and soul and also budget into, I, as a personality, tend to go deep in terms of curiosity on, well, what's the right thing to do here, not only for today, but also to kind of future-proof the house. And maybe that's where my slightly neurotic tendencies come in that push me above average for you.
Mm-hmm. No, and what I was going to say is that you are up to date, you're well informed. The decisions that you make are not
hemming and hawing for days or weeks, you make decisions that you need to make in order to move forward. And that's what I'm talking about, is just like the experience deal. And I haven't told you this in person, but the experience dealing with you as a customer was great for me, because I didn't have to bang my head off the wall every time I tried to explain something simple and you asked me to re-explain it. Anyway, I'm not talking down my customer base. A lot of them are great. But I just found that you were different right off the bat because of the homework you put in up front to you and I even having a meeting or a discussion. So that's kind of what I mean.
Well, I appreciate you saying that. And yeah, you know, there was a lot of homework that it went into this. And, you know, Sarah and I also sort of clarifying our values on the things that we had to have, and then other things that, you know, we were willing to risk or live without. And so I think having some of that clarity made those decisions easier, and probably made your life hopefully a little bit easier on your end too.
Yeah, no, for sure. But I think that the audience listening to this, the way the podcast is going to be framed once I finish all of that stuff, and the way I'm going to, that the angle on it is, a lot of residential company owners, technicians, so on and so forth, will probably want to listen to this, because it's basically taking an old, your home is, it's old. You can get into detail in a minute, but it's an older home in a beautiful neighborhood, by the way, that was cold and drafty. And you didn't like that, obviously, as someone living in a home. You don't want to feel cold and drafty in a wintertime when you're living there. So you made a bunch of changes. So let's talk about what you did off the bat once you discovered how cold and drafty the home was to start rectifying the situation.
Yeah, well, it is an old house. So the house was built in 1904. By the lumber baron in the town at the time. So it's a wood framed house with a sandwich of layers of siding and that sort of thing as the building envelope. And we learned early days that our air changes per hour were really high. I think we were approaching about 12 when we first bought the house. And we certainly felt that. I mean, we were sitting in the family room watching a movie and you could feel the wind blowing past the back of your neck. And even one winter, it was snowing in the right direction. The snow was literally blowing right through the door. And the biggest symptom for us, other than just feeling cold and uncomfortable, was the furnace would like blast on, cycle on and off. And I didn't really understand maybe all the root causes of what was going on there. You know, it would blast on, the room would get really warm for about 10 minutes. It would cool down really quickly, and then we'd repeat the cycle again. And so we knew that we wanted to make some changes, one, to just improve the comfort of the house, two, to improve the performance and the efficiency, and three, because we really value the sustainability aspect of things. So in the course of the project we did, we really focused on two big things. One was beefing up insulation wherever we could, practically. So that means we didn't blow out exterior walls. We didn't beef up the outside of the house. We, where walls were open, made sure that they were insulated really well. Number two was we really focused on air sealing, because we knew the draftiness and those air changes was a huge issue. And when we looked into simulators that showed the implications of draftiness, let's call it, on HVAC loads and sizing, to us, that looked like the biggest delta and one of the biggest bangs for our buck. And so we did a lot of manual air sealing, of course, things like caulking and making sure that windows were foamed up and really great smart air and vapor barrier. We also did something called AeroSeal, which basically brought our air changes down to about 3. And I'm actually optimistic we're actually below that now, given some additional changes we've made. So that was really the big focus for us. And that we knew would enable us to have a great HVAC heating and cooling system that was as efficient as we wanted. But we knew we had to do those things to make that possible.
Mm-hmm. Can you maybe talk us through the AeroSeal thing? Because I've never done it before. I've never been involved before with it. And I'm sure a lot of the audience members maybe want to know what this is, because their customer base probably has the same issues. They got cold, drafty homes, but they blame it. This is what happens a lot of the times. Okay. We have building envelope issues and we have HVAC issues. They are separate from each other, right? Mm-hmm. if the building envelope is leaky and all of the humidity or the dehumidification or the heat or the cooling that you're putting into the this leaky home, it just dissipates very, very quickly, that's a building envelope issue, right? We have to deal with that. It's not necessarily the HVAC system's fault. It's doing what it can, but all the work that it's doing, it's losing it all. So talk us through this AeroSeal stuff, because I think it's interesting.
Yeah, and you're right that everything's so connected. And the other factor, the least of which, by the way, is human behavior. You know, like windows being popped open because you have a shower, and then people are like, oh, the HVAC is, you know, cycling all the time. So there's all kinds of factors that, to your point, they're separate issues, but they pop up in one area or another. For us, AeroSeal came into our radar because on our last house, which by the way was also a really old house, built in 1889, same drafty issues, but we didn't do as extensive a reno there. So we didn't have the opportunity to, for example, foam things up and put in really great air and vapor barrier. And so I spent, you know, the better part of a year with like a caulking gun in hand every weekend, just like going around and attacking drafty areas. And the reality is that all of that work and all of that effort, you know, really makes a marginal difference. It makes a difference, no doubt, but it's a lot of work for percentage points on your air changes per hour. When it came time to this house, we thought, you know, there's got to be a better way to get our air changes per hour down and tighten up the house. And we came across this company called Aero Barrier, and they basically have two offerings, Gary. So one is called Aero Seal, and that is for sealing up your ducts, and we can talk about that after. But the other one is called Aero Barrier for your building envelope. What they basically do is they put your house under positive pressure, and they spray
with a blower door, right?
With a blower door, correct.
Okay, yep.
Then inside the house, they spray what's effectively an atomized powder version of caulk. And so you imagine if you're filling up a balloon, and inside that balloon is all kind of airborne powder, all that powder is going to follow any of the holes that you then poke in the balloon as you blow more air into it. And what's really neat about the powder that they figured out is they've got it so it's adhesive and it sticks to itself. So as it blows through all of the tiny cracks and openings in the building envelope, it blocks holes right up to about a quarter of an inch big. And so we did this on the house, and I would say in about 5 hours, we saw a 75% reduction in envelope leakiness by doing this. So huge, huge improvement. We'd never be able to do that, you know, walking around with caulking guns and foam cans by ourselves.
Yeah. Exactly. That's massive. Now, you said you went from about 12 air changes to an optimistically low, just under 3 air changes. Is that
correct?
Is that what you said? Okay. Now, are you living in the house just yet?
We are just about living in the house. I'm here like 12 hours a day in the lead up to getting it totally livable. So we're spending lots of time here. Yeah.
Yeah. I've seen, I mean, for those that want to follow, because you do a lot of, would you consider yourself a home vlogger as well?
Yeah, sure.
Okay. So maybe you can tell, what's your Instagram handle so people can check out and follow along with what you do and stuff like that.
Yeah, great. It's at Reed Moore House, R-E-A-D, Moore, M-O-R-E House. And it's basically our personal journeys. This isn't a business or anything that we do. We're really just passionate about fixing up this now second old house that we own. And we basically cover everything from energy efficiency and making the house more sustainable through to how we are designing it and thinking about design choices.
Perfect. Okay. So the reason I was asking you if you were in the home yet, does the air changes per hour falling to such a low number of tightness, are you thinking about fresh air in the future? Like, how do you implement some fresh air into the home if you start having some humidity issues, CO2 issues? Is measuring that something that you're considering doing when you actually start living in the house?
Absolutely. So we do have something like an mechanical air exchange system on our radar. we will measure once we've moved in. And the reason we haven't measured so far is because we're not actually undertaking like day-to-day regular activity. It's probably
exactly. Yeah, right? That's right.
Not a super valid indicator.
Yeah, it's not realistic till you're actually living in the home. The day-to-day routine stuff starts to happen.
Yeah, right? Like showers going on and dishes being done and all that stuff. So we will definitely measure because we want to keep on top of that stuff just to see how it's performing, but also be able to tell, well, what is the fresh air solution that's going to be, you know, right for us. And I'm a big believer in that. I mean, there is critique out there about sealing up buildings too tight, you know, because of this notion that buildings need to breathe. And I think that's true to a certain extent, but there are lots of ways to define breathability and how we do it. And so
if you guys are in the US and you want to order some tools online, True Tech Tools, we got a promo code there. It's KNOWITALL, one word, KNOWITALL, saves you 8% on your purchase. They carry Yellow Jacket now, but they got Testo, they got Navac, they got Supco, they got all kinds of stuff for you to check out. So check out True Tech Tools and use promo code KNOWITALL to save 8%.
Certainly something that we're starting to think about.
Perfect. Okay. So you bought this older home. It's your forever home. There was issues with the building envelope and that seems to be fixed. I want to talk to you about two other things. One thing quickly, I want to talk to you about the water heater that you chose because you're a big proponent of electrification, correct?
Correct. Yes.
Okay. So even though you have a couple of fireplaces in the home, which you will use normally for like backup heat or if, you know what I mean? What's your thought on the fireplaces?
Yeah. So the fireplace is funny. We are electrifying, yet there's two new gas fireplaces going in. And so people are like, hey, that's kind of a head scratcher. So there's two reasons for the fireplaces, Gary. So one is, it is an old house and the fireplaces that went in, are actually in locations where original fireplaces were that were missing. So from a restoration standpoint, we wanted to bring those back, and wanted to do something that looked period appropriate to the home. So the models we found were gas. And the second thing is, to your point, there's a little bit of decoration or romance. So there is a nice feel to having a gas fireplace on, certainly in a house of this age.
Yeah, I agree.
And three, certainly there is a backup heat option there for us should we need it. So some of that too is also thinking about resilience.
Yes, perfect. Okay. Because that's going to bring me to your, in a few minutes, just so everybody knows, Kevin made a gamble on something that we discussed and it was his decision. And I don't know if I wrote it in the work order, but I probably should have, that it was Kevin's decision and not mine. Anyway, I wanted to ask you, because you're a proponent of electrification, I wanted to ask you about the Rheem water heater that you chose to install in the house. It has nothing to do with gas. It's a heat pump driven water heater. Do you want to talk about that for a minute?
Yeah, it is. So that one is a heat pump water heater. And actually, that's a hybrid. So it does have electric resistance in it as well.
Oh, it does? Okay.
It does, which is, as you know, Gary, not like me. But that's the model that was available on the water heaters. When we moved in, the water heater, one was a rental. And the unit itself was something like 18 years old. So it had a pretty good life. Those rental fees were still continuing. I did the math one day on what the total rental fees over the lifetime of that unit were. And that was enough for me to say, you know what, I've got to pull the Band-Aid on this thing and put in our own unit. And we knew we wanted to increase efficiency and go electric. So that was right around the time that the heat pump models were coming into market, and put one in. And it's been great. And I've been tracking the data on it too. We're, I think, paying around 25 cents a day for hot water when we were living in the house using it regularly. It's been great for us.
Yeah, that's good to hear. And I've been speaking to Rheem about this because I'm very open to checking out new technologies, as my audience knows, and I like to tackle them and learn about them and then give that information back to the audience. But I was talking to Rheem about this, and I might be getting into their lab actually very soon to create some content around this heat pump water heater, because apparently it's not new. Apparently the technology has been around for a while and I didn't know that. But I was talking to one of their sales reps, and he said he put an amp probe on one of them when it was running and it was drawing less than 3 amps. It was like 2 point something amps, and it was heating the water. And he says that a lot of savings come out of these with the existing customer base. They get a lot of good feedback about these water heaters. So that's pretty cool that you, and I like the fact that it's got backup resistance heat just in case. Is it because just in case for everything fails in life, everything's got an expiry date. Is it just in case the heat pump starts to fail or there's a problem with it? Is that what the backup electric's for?
I actually think, Gary, it's, and I could be wrong here, but my guess is it's actually for times where you have higher demand than normal.
Oh, is it? Okay.
Than when your tank capacity would normally allow for. So, you know, we've got a 65-gallon tank. It's just Sarah and I in the house currently. That's like more hot water than, you know, we could use in a day for the most part. Christmas and Thanksgiving, the house is full of 10 people. Everybody's taking a shower in the morning. I think that high demand mode kicks in, and it's actually using at those times the heat pump and the resistance to heat. So it can produce water fairly quickly.
Okay. Yeah. But if it's just kind of humming along, maintaining, it's just going to use the heat pump aspect.
Exactly.
Cool. Okay. So there's that part of the electrification. Now, I guess there was a point where you and I got introduced and we moved forward with a project, and that was to install a MoveAir heat pump. Now, the MoveAir wasn't my choice. I didn't sell you on this. I was brought in by Glenn Mascarene from the Master Group, who's like, hey, I got a customer that wants a MoveAir. Let's talk about how you landed on MoveAir, how you found them, and what piqued your interest about MoveAir, and then why we moved forward on that specific project.
Yeah, sure. It's a great question. I mean, we, as you mentioned, have been doing homework for months and months about the option that we wanted to take on switching from gas furnace to a heat pump system. And we knew we wanted to do that centrally. We had a great, for the most part, central duct network through the house. And so, for us, big things were making sure that the performance really was there in cold climate. I would say that was like one of the single highest sort of decision criteria for us. There certainly were a couple of models that we grouped into that category and shortlisted quite early, a couple of brands. And, you know, without necessarily mentioning those brands, when we started to look into the unit costs, they were up there. And I think like it's not unjustified. I think some of them had great reputations, huge global names. And that probably makes sense.
You mean like Mitsubishi?
Yeah, that's one. That's one of them. Yeah.
Hey, I got nothing against Mitsubishi. Not at all. I think they're great machines and they run well. I decommissioned one that ran forever, and it ran for like 17, 18 years and basically no problems except for minor things. Mm-hmm. What I'm going to say here is that I think some of these other brands that are coming in now, the technology is on par, but yeah. Mitsubishi has the name, and because of the name, they charge a little bit more for the same type of technology. And I think maybe you've seen that because you don't want to cut quality, because as soon as you cut quality in anything these days, you pay for it in the long run. Mm-hmm. So did you see a little bit of that where, okay, Mitsubishi, yeah, it's a great machine, but here's the thing, we're paying a good percentage of that just on the name alone.
Yeah. And I'm glad to hear you say that, because it validates, you know, what I was seeing and some of the feelings that we did have. And we, by the way, had two Mitsubishi split pumps on our last house. They were there when we moved in, so we didn't necessarily buy those. But they were great. And we actually used those little units instead of the central unit most of the time in that house. So we ourselves had this great Mitsubishi experience. You know, we were undertaking a lot on the house, so our budget was stretched across a fairly big house and a lot that we had to do. So we were, you know, looking at budget as a big priority too. And so, a couple of things led us to MoveAir. So one was, as I was looking at the performance specs and got good at reading like COP charts and that sort of thing in my homework.
I'm not even good at reading those, man. And look at you go.
Yeah, well, I won't, don't put me to test there, but certainly in my research, I was like, okay, I think I can find like what the comparable attributes are across these models. Two, you know, I really liked having a Canadian distributor, behind this thing. Not to say that a Mitsu model couldn't have come from a Canadian distributor, but I, you know, that was important to us on everything we're doing in the house. We're trying to buy Canadian, trying to buy local, put in local materials. And yeah, that may be manufactured somewhere else, but it was nice to have a Canadian sort of brand name on it. And three, I just got a really great lightning fast response from the Move Air team, Glenn in particular. So I reached out with a bunch of questions and I had the phone ringing in 14 minutes and it wasn't like a, you know, receptionist calling me. It was like their director of sales for heat pumps being like, hey, we really want to make sure you've got the support you need and let's, you know, make something happen. So all around, I think we just felt really comfortable with Move Air. And we also have a couple of sort of communities we belong to of folks who are doing eco restorations and renovations on their homes. A number of them had Move Air units, also older homes that were performing really well right through the winter. And so for us, that was all the proof points we needed.
Gotcha. Okay. So yes, we put in a Move Air. We put in we didn't just lick our lips and go outside and let the wind tell us what size to put in. We did a proper load calculation, and you were involved in that because you were able to send drawings and stuff over to my HVAC designer who came up with a load calculation for heat loss and heat gain. And that's basically how we sized the machine, right?
Yeah. And I, like, just from a homeowner perspective, if there's any homeowners out there listening to this, I can't stress that enough, because our experience before finding you, Gary, was it was just lick of the lips, like, okay, let's pick a size based on something like square footage. And, you know, I was sitting down one day thinking about this. It's like, yeah, maybe our house is 2,000 square feet, but if there's a 2,000 square foot house with 8-foot ceilings versus, you know, our house is an older house, has like 10.5-foot ceilings in some space, that's like a huge difference in volume that this thing's got to produce for the house. And so that's just volume. Then you've got things like insulation and air sealing and all of the stuff that we were about to do. And so I didn't want to be buying a unit sized for, one, a guess, and B, a guess of the current state of the house. I wanted to be buying a unit based on data and evidence and about the future state of the house after the improvements were made. And so your insistence and encouragement to go do some actual modeling made me super happy on that front. And I was actually able to geek out with the modelers a little bit too on creating a couple of different scenarios, because we still had some choices ahead of us.
Yeah. But your home is much larger than 2,000 square feet, is it not?
The house is, the house is bigger. I was using that as an example.
Oh, okay. I see what you're saying. Okay,
yeah, gotcha. This house is between 3,000 and 3,500. Depends which set of drawings you're looking at. But yeah, it's a bigger house for sure.
Okay, perfect. All right. So we decided on the Move Air. And I mean, we put in a centralized system. And the load calc came out to... Now, I don't remember all the numbers and I don't have the load calc in the report in front of me, but we ended up putting in a 4-ton heat pump because that's what was asked to put in. There's a lot of factors when it comes to that, but mainly the load calculation was the main factor as to why we went with the 4-ton. Now, we talked about this, and this is what most people usually do when they put in a heat pump. Is they'll do dual fuel where they got a furnace and the heat pump is the primary source of heat, heating the home. And if there's ever a case where it gets really, really cold outside, the heat pump can't keep up, it starts to lose a little bit of capacity, then we're going to kick over to the furnace and the furnace is going to kick in and it's going to heat our home. The other option is electric heat strips, basically resistive heat, as you know, because you talked about it in the Rheem unit. Those can work in tandem with your heat pump, where if your heat pump is starting to decline in capacity because of the outside temperature, your heat strips can actually kick in to kind of supplement the heat pump and bring that discharge air temperature back to what you need it to be to heat the home. You declined both options.
Yeah. And I'm guessing your question is, what the heck were we thinking and why?
Well, the fact that you got two fireplaces and you have some in-floor, you have electric in-floor radiant in certain parts of the home,
right,
was sort of like a reasoning behind that. Hey, if the heat pump loses some capacity because it hits minus 30 for some weird reason in Toronto, which probably won't happen, and if it does, it's going to be freak. If it does, and it's going to be for like 1 or 2 days type thing. But you have some supplemental heat with the fireplaces and the in-floor electric. So was that part of the decision as well?
Navac has come out with their lightweight but swift recovery machine as the NR7. It is about 20 pounds. The footprint is very, very small. And they've also launched these big boy recovery hoses, and they're rapid wise. So the big boy recovery hoses are 3/8 connection on one side, quarter inch connection on the other, and then the rapid Y instead of going through manifold gauges. Check it out, guys, the NR7 from Navac.
It was, but I would say it wasn't the primary driver for us. And I think maybe this goes back to what you said earlier about us not being the average homeowner. We, I would say, were being and are being very ambitious about how far we can go with electrification of the home. In driving efficiency, because I know we're talking about electric heat strips, so that's technically still electrification. We did our very best for our budget on insulation, on air sealing, on everything efficiency. And so we said, well, let's see if we can make this work without backup heat. We had two reasons, maybe three reasons of encouragement to tell us that that was possible. One was the reason you said, well, we do have some other heat sources, and while not major, they are significant and will make a difference to comfort if we should need them down the road. I think number two is we talked to a bunch of people with Move Air units with similar age and size homes to us, and their experience was, for the most part, that their heat strips aren't necessarily having to be turned on even when it gets cold.
Yeah, I've heard this. There's a story that Glenn actually told me that another install, central system similar to yours, and I think he called them after the winter and he asked them how many times the heat strips kicked in. I don't know if the homeowner would have actually known that. And his response was, oh shit, I forgot to call the electrician to have them hooked up. This is after the winter time.
Yeah, yeah. And then I think the third thing was there really wasn't a ton of risk to not doing it, because if we found in the middle of February we're calling you, Gary, and we're shivering in the house and we really need to add some heat strips, and this was something I remember I asked you, it was like, well, could we put them in later? And the answer was yes.
Yes. Yep.
Would it be easier to do at the time of install? Maybe, because we've got electrical runs being done, we've got all this, the work being done in that area, but we were willing to take that chance. So maybe episode two, maybe we should do a sequel to this podcast in like March, and we'll report back on if we've put heat strips in or not.
Hey, we're like almost mid-January. I know you're not living in the home yet, but when you're at the home, have you noticed any issues with the system? Because I mean, we haven't been that cold this winter. This is kind right. of a weird winter. Like Christmas Day, there was no snow on the ground. And that's the first time I remember no snow on the ground. I remember warm Decembers, but not zero snow on the ground on Christmas Day. But we have hit -8, -9, -10°C in the middle of the night on some nights so far. I know you're not there in the middle of the night to report on that, but when you're at the home, do you see any struggles? Is the thermostat always at the set point type thing?
Yeah, it hasn't had any struggles so far. And even when we have been here on the cold days to date, which I think during the daytime we've got to maybe -5, -6 from what I've noticed, it's doing just fine. So we've been really pleased with that. I'm kind of geekily and nervously awaiting like one of these -25 days that comes across. And we always get a couple of those each year, or a couple stretches like that. And I think that'll be the real test for us. But so far, it's been great. I think even in those few cold days that we have had, you know, it's not cycling like the old unit was. It's very quiet. It's a nice, comfortable, sort of consistent heat. And so we've been really, really happy with what we've experienced. And we have been spending a lot of time here basically short of sleeping. So we've got, you know, some encouraging signs.
Yeah, and you bring up a good point, because it is super quiet. When you enter, it's kind of a, just I'll give the audience sort of a breakdown. So your basement, it's like a, I don't know, is it stone foundation or something that's around?
Yep.
Okay, so yeah, it's you feel like you're going into like a cellar almost, like of an old restaurant, or it's kind of like a cool feel to it when you get down there. But because of the height restrictions, we could not stand this unit up. No matter how I put it through my brain, there was no way to stand the air handler up like a furnace would. We had to put it on its side. And because of that, we had to take up a little bit more space down there, because we had to run duct out to it and then run back to where the main plenum would be for the supply. Now, when I go down there, or when I was there and I'd go down and get to the basement with the fan running, you don't even know that the fan is running in the air handler, to be honest with you, until you actually touch it and you feel a slight vibration. When I was installing it, as you know, I make videos and stuff of what I do online all the time. When I was installing it, and I used these anchors that would go into the joist and then threaded rod hanging down, I had people saying, oh, the customer is going to hate that, because all they're going to feel is vibration above them on that floor where that air handler's dangling from. We did use rubber pads, but I would be like, really, I think I'd want to try to remove the rubber pads just to see what the vibration, I wouldn't leave them out, but I think I'd like to remove them just to see if there's any further vibration, because that air handler is like whisper quiet.
It is. And I've been spending a lot of the time I have been in the house in the basement as well, like you're saying. And I don't even notice that it's on, to your point, other than it's nice and warm and toasty down there, particularly because I've got a few supply runs still open down there. And in the floor above it, so that sits right below the family room. And I'll be perfectly honest, Gary, when I learned that we were going horizontal and it was going to be hanging from those joists, I was a little bit nervous, because the last thing I wanted was, you know, we're watching a movie in the family room above on a cold night and like the floor is vibrating or there's a hum or something. And that hasn't been the case, even when that thing's really fired up. So I've been really pleased with it so far. I would love, for curiosity's sake, to take those pads out and see what it's like. Now, we did do a lot of like structural work in the house. You would have seen in the basement a bunch of big LVL beams down there and a bunch of posts. So that may be contributing too, because the house is probably the most solid it's been ever, including even before it was, when it was first built. But yeah, that thing is quiet and we don't notice it on. We certainly notice it less than our gas unit. So we're excited about that.
Perfect. So what I would like to do is, if possible, once you get into the house, or you don't even have to be in, or once it's cleaned up and ready, I would like to come back and do like just sort of a checkup on the machine. I'd like to go through your ream heat pump with you and show that to the audience as well. And just kind of get the feedback from you live on site and make a video of it, that you could even post on your vlog site too. And just show the audience what the technology can do these days to lower your energy bill, but still be comfortable, still maintain domestic hot water and all those things. But the technology is making it easier and using less energy to do so.
Absolutely. And we can do, we should do that video in the basement with the water heater running, the air handler going, because you could easily have a conversation at normal voice down there. You barely notice that these things are on. And then the other thing that'll be really cool, and I don't even know if you're aware of this, is the new electrical panel we put in is the Leviton Load Center. So it's Wi-Fi connected and monitoring priority circuits for us. So we do have a smart breaker in on the heat pump and air handler. So I'm actually going to be monitoring real time and trending energy use once we're into the house. So I'd love to report back on that, because I'm going to do a sort of A/B comparison on all our utility costs before and after all the changes we've made.
Yes. Did you ever, I remember you showing me that and I thought it was super cool. Did you ever look in to see if surge protection or over under voltages were included in what that that style of breaker did for you?
It's not, but we are going to add a whole panel surge protector to that unit because it's not just the heat pump now. When you've got an electrified house, you're even more exposed to something like that being a disaster for you. So that's on our list of things to do.
Yeah, I've becoming, as I learn more about over under voltages like brownouts and utility over voltage and close proximity surges and stuff from lightning strikes, I'm becoming more of a proponent to telling customers, yeah, if you don't have this in your home, this and this might happen. I mean, nothing might happen, but if you don't have it, you could have all this equipment you just put in fail on you because it's all circuit boards. I mean, these circuit boards are very delicate. They're not built to take these surges. You know what I mean? They're not built for compressors and motors are not built for brownouts, for under voltages or even over voltages. So having this protection in place is a really good idea. So I'm glad that you're going down that path as well.
Yeah, for sure. And I think for the small investment in that, the peace of mind is amazing because it would be such a huge catastrophe to lose a bunch of equipment like what we've put in and, you know, have been able to prevent that.
Mm-hmm. So this is the part where I say to the audience, see, I told you so. Kevin's not your average customer because the average customer couldn't carry this conversation for almost 40 minutes. So
I could go for another 40 minutes. So happy to keep it rolling.
Well, I mean, we'll leave it at that for now. We should definitely do something where I come over. Congrats on the house. We look at the house as a whole and you talk about what you did. We look at your water heater. We look at the heat pump and other people can learn from this, which is the main goal of what I'm trying to do. And I'm sure that's partially what you're trying to do too, is give yourself exposure, but let other people benefit from the exposure you're giving yourself.
Oh, for sure. And I would say, you know, neighbors and even people who have been following our journey online, you know, we get these questions or these comments like, holy smokes, we didn't even think that was possible for our house. And it totally is. There's a certain level of sort of, yeah, it's education and awareness, but I would also say confidence, because you really do need to sort of dig deep to figure out if one of these things is going to work for you or not and how it all pieces together. Mm-hmm. And unless you have a Gary on your team, or someone like you who's willing to connect you to modelers, who's willing to sort of push back on how you're thinking about things, you know, you really can be veered away from something that could be amazing, but it just takes a little bit of creativity to make it work. And I think our whole setup, hot water, heating and cooling, insulation, air sealing, these are things that are readily available. And just with a little bit of good planning, we're going to be able to pull it off. And I'm really excited to be able to tell that story and share that with others.
Amazing. Okay, Kevin, man, I appreciate your time and I look forward to getting into the home once you guys have it all set up and ready and have a tour, man. I'm looking forward to it.
That'll be great. It'll be good to have you back here with finished floors and running water and all that stuff too. So we'll make sure that happens.
And I don't need to go to the coffee shop to use the washroom either.
There is a working toilet here. So
oh, awesome.
Yeah, awesome. We're counting that as a huge milestone.
Hope you enjoyed the show. Follow HVAC Know-It-All on Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, TikTok, Twitter, LinkedIn, and anywhere else Gary feels like popping up. This has been a Two Smokes and a Coffee production.